My name is Lee Hansen. It is July 12th. What day is it? Monday, July 12th. And I'm here with Chuck Halaby to do an oral history interview with him about the closing of the Institute of Industrial Relations. And he's kindly consented to meet with me and answer some questions about it. So let me begin by asking, when did you come to Madison?
I came to Madison in August 1974. I'd been offered a job as an assistant professor, but I didn't finish my dissertation, so I was an instructor for 2 years, and then became an assistant professor in 76. So I've been here, I've completed 30 years.
30 years, wow.
Yeah.
And what prompted you to become associate dean? I mean, had you served as department chair, I'm sure.
Yeah, I had served as department chair, and my experience with South Hall during that time was very good. And when I was department chair, someone stepped down from the LNS Academic Planning Council just for a brief sabbatical, and they asked me to sit in for him. Mm-hmm. This was Bob Hawkins in journalism, and so I did that. And then during that term, they asked me to run for a vacancy that was about to open up. So I did that, and much to my surprise, I won that election. So I was now a member of the Academic Planning Council. And when Mary Ann Fitzpatrick, she was my associate dean, when her term was up, they put out a call for applicants for the social science dean position. And I didn't apply because I didn't want to do it. I wanted to go back to being a researcher and teacher. And I got some calls from people who work in South Hall, but not Phil, but others, you know, encouraging me. And the deadline passed, and I thought, oh, finally, I'm off the hook, right? Week went by, they called me again. I said, what, don't you guys respect deadlines? So what's going on here? And so finally I got a call one morning he introduced himself as your dean. Hello, Chuck, this is your dean. And at first I didn't realize who it was. I thought, who do I know by the name of your dean? Because it had a southern twang and your dean sounds southern. Anyway, it was Phil, and he asked me to come over and talk about the job. And at least interview for it. Mm-hmm. So I agreed to interview for it. Mm-hmm. And, the next day I was offered the job. The reason I took it is because the college had developed in me a feeling of obligation to them. Mm-hmm. They had been good to me when I was chair. And I sort of felt like I'd been groomed for this. And so I felt like I had no real alternative once Phil sort of asked me. So I felt like I was obliged to do it. I never discussed compensation or perks or anything. Yeah. I just said, okay, I'll do it.
Yeah.
That's how I came to be a social science guy.
And when did you begin?
I began at the worst possible time. I began January 1, 2002. And the budget crunch just began to hit, and the very first thing that I had to do of a major nature was withdraw 10 positions that we had allocated to social science departments. So I had to notify them that I was cutting those positions and closing them down for recruitment. So departments that had one position went to zero. Departments that had two went to one, and so forth.
Yeah.
And so that's when I started. Yeah. That was my first major decision.
Right. So when did you become acting director of IRRI? And I'm a little hazy on who did what.
And what happened?
Heinemann and
Witte. Right. I've been reviewing the history in anticipation of this meeting, so let me give you some background as far as my involvement. When I became chair of sociology in 97, Mary Ann Fitzpatrick, who had been associate dean for the social sciences for about 6 months, I guess, asked to have lunch with me to discuss the institute. So we went to lunch, and she said, well, you know, what should we do with this institute? And what she said, what's your impression of it? And my impression was that, and I told her, was that its heyday has passed. That when Hansen retired, and Kane retired, and Stern retired, and Barbash retired or died, I don't remember. And when the economics department took, or the economics discipline took a different turn totally, the heyday had passed, and now it was on a downward spiral, and Paula Voos was just about to leave for Rutgers. I said, you probably, you know, I don't know anything about it, but as a scholarly enterprise, I would close it. And she said, well, I'm not taking that advice. There are too many people interested in keeping it open. I said, fine. I said, I can't judge the educational program, just the research component of it. So what happened after that? Well, I think Craig Olson was appointed director. I think he served for 2 years, and then he was going to go to Illinois.
Right.
So now it's like 99,
yeah.
And they're doing a search.
Right.
And the guy that I was not on the search committee, but I had some kind of an involvement. I'm not sure why, but Jim Walker was heading up the search committee. He was chair of economics, and Craig was involved in it as well. And they kind of kept me posted for some reason. I wasn't dean yet or anything. I was still chair of sociology. Oh, I know why they kept me posted. Because they were trying to recruit a sociologist.
Oh, okay.
They tried to recruit Arne Kalberg from North Carolina.
Right.
And that would have been great. He would have fit very smoothly in our department. It would have been terrific. And we had a discussion one day about, this was after Arne visited, I think, or maybe he was on his way. He was coming. And we talked about what that recruitment visit would be like. And I remember that that both Jim and Craig, speaking on behalf of the committee and their own views, they kept insisting that Kalberg had to demand from the dean two positions. The dean had to make a commitment for two positions, possibly tenured positions, and Arne needed to know this going in, and he had to basically, you know, make that kind of demand on Phil. Now, up to that point, I had very little interaction with Phil. I had just started on APC and was getting to, but I never talked to Phil about department business, ever. But my feeling from what I had heard about him was that that wouldn't be a good idea, okay? I just didn't think it would be forthcoming, but what really turned me off to this idea was that if they built up in Arne's mind the idea that he had to get these positions and he could only take the job if he got these positions, I thought they were creating a barrier to hiring this guy. And I told them, I said, you guys, this is not the way to do it. I said, get him here, then deal with this stuff.
Right.
Play it soft at this point. Otherwise, you're telling him that if he doesn't get positions, he shouldn't take the job. He's not going to get the positions. He's not going to take the job. You guys are going to be stuck. They said, no, we got to do it this way. So they did it their way, and Arne turned down the job eventually because he might have turned it down anyway.
Yeah.
Right? Who knows?
Yeah.
But he definitely didn't get a full-blown commitment to tenured positions, okay? He got more of a soft kind of, well, let's see what you can accomplish, and we'll move in that direction slowly, step at a time. Which is how Phil works. And so then there was another recruitment. And I was appointed to the committee. And we, I guess, made an offer to someone, Morris something, at the University of Minnesota. An IR guy. Maybe he was in the econ department, some kind of ties. Anyway, he was a good candidate. I keep wanting to say Morris Rosenberg, but I'm not. That's probably not right. Anyway, what the committee did the same thing. And I was on it now, and I argued, look, you lost Arne Kalberg. I said, forget about this stuff, just hire the guy, and then we'll take it from there, you know, and develop these, get these positions out of the dean. And to make a long story short, they made him the offer, he turned us down, who knows why, right? So then the second person, I guess, out of that committee came, there was an alternative possibility, and that was a graduate of the program at Rutgers currently.
Oh yeah, Adrian.
Adrian Eaton.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So they offered Adrian Eaton the position, and I think she accepted, see, I think she might have accepted conditional on the tenure decision made by the university. And what happened there was, so while the offer to her was still outstanding, and her case was at divisional committee, I became social science dean, right? So another thing that occurred early in my tenure was that she didn't get the kind of favorable vote from divisional committee that she, that Phil needed to to approve her for tenure. So we put our heads together, sort of tried to figure, we decided that what we were going to do was we were going to put her up again and make a better case, right? And I was pretty, the other thing we were thinking about was she needed to have tenure. And IR is not a tenure home. So my thought was, why not move IR into La Follette? La Follette is a tenure home. Make it a unit of La Follette. Witte, at the time, was director of, of La Follette. Witte liked the idea, you know, and then tenure wouldn't be, her tenure home wouldn't be an issue. She'd be appointed in La Follette as director of IR. So I thought this was great. So we go about, John Witte actually goes about, because he was also interim director at the time of IR, right? He goes about the business of formulating a new tenure dossier for her, one that hopefully would be more convincing. And I was like totally behind this. And I liked the idea of moving it into La Follette. I just thought the whole thing was nice and clean and it would be really good. And so I was excited about it. Within a few days, Adrian withdrew her candidacy. Right? So now, Witte was coming up to the end of his term. We're talking now about February 2002. Witte's term ended at the end of that year as interim director. So we needed, so Witte said, well, the first thing you need to do is get another director. So I started looking around for a... another director. And my first thought was Barry Gebhardt.
Gebhardt.
I'm thinking of, we know who I'm thinking of. And so I had a discussion, this was at La Follette, I think we had this discussion, Witte was probably present. And I told him to think, you know, about whether he'd be interested in taking this job. Right. He didn't commit to take it. And there was some kind of a, afterwards we walked back here and there was some kind of a provision attached to my interest in him taking it. I didn't have the authority to offer the job, so I was just trying to learn of his interest in it. I did know that if he did take the job, LNS would pay some percentage of his salary, 25 or 50%, okay, of a business school salary. So I went back and I talked to Phil about this plan, and Phil thought, well, geez, you know, we were in a budget crunch, and now we're going to pay a business school salary. We need to find a different solution. I don't, he didn't think this would work. I said, okay, well, there are other possibilities. There are people in LNS who could potentially do it, you know. And I talked to some of them, and they weren't interested. And so now it's getting to be April, and I call a meeting to sort of discuss the future of industrial relations and say, look, you know, somebody's got to step up and be director, otherwise I'm going to be director, and that's heading down the wrong path. And because at that point, I viewed, I thought I would be successful if I could save the Institute, find a director, revive the place, you know, because I had come to learn what I still believe, and that that is that there was something valuable about the educational program that was worth saving. Anyway, for that meeting, what I did was I decided that I should do something. It's a meeting. I'm calling it. There are going to be about 10 to 12 people there, all associated with the Institute, far more than I'm associated with it. I just stepped in. It was Witte was still the director, I believe. And... what happened then was, I decided that I better learn more about the Institute, because this is a meeting for planning its future. I need to learn about it, it's finances.
Right.
So I had 5 years' worth of budget printed out. And I looked over the budget. For the 5 years, it was like 4 years, I think it was. Anyway, it was close to $1 million accumulated over the 4 years. But the striking thing about it was that 80% of those dollars were flowing to faculty and instructors who were not in the college. They were in the business school, they were in school for workers, they were not in the college, okay? In fact, the only thing left in the college was, as far as the teaching program, was like a 25% appointment of Jonathan Zeiland. So you look at this thing, and I say to myself, wait a second, this is not a L&S program. This is a business school program, because the bulk of the money was going to business school.
Right.
I said, this is a business school program. And L&S is footing the bill at a time when it became kind of, you know, money funding was dear. And so the way I coined it was basically as follows. I said, and the business school people were really, seemed to be genuinely, intellectually committed to the Institute, right? There was hardly any real genuine L&S commitment to it. Even Jonathan's commitment was more to the PhD program than to the master's program, right? So the way the cute phrase I coined for myself was that, you know, the unit that owns it, L&S, doesn't care about it. And the unit that cares about it, the business school, doesn't own it. So what we needed to do was align ownership with intellectual commitment to the enterprise, right? And so to me, that meant moving it to the business school. It just seemed like the soundest kind of proposition. So at this meeting, I passed out the budget. I said, did anybody notice anything about this? And I pointed it out, and everybody said, yeah. And I said, so I think what we need to do, if you guys are really interested in seeing the survival of this thing, and are not just interested in having your salaries bought out by L&S every, you know, once a year, a part of your salaries bought out. Because there is the financial aspect of this. They were benefiting. They were going off the business school budget and onto L&S budget. So I said, you know, if you're really intellectually interested, what you'll do is convince your new dean to take it over, right? There was a lot of, no, we can't do that, da, da, da. Anyway, to make a long story short, I pursued that path. In fact, Phil and I went and we talked to Kinetter back in early summer, 2002. And I had a meeting with Don Schwab. He was interested in doing this. And I remember at the meeting with Kinetter, there was a little element of hope, you know. I said, you know, I pointed out that they have units like this at MIT, they have units like this at Wharton. This is not so ridiculous, you know. And R.D. Nair said, yeah, we have many, you know, we have a big umbrella and we embrace many different activities and so forth. So I was kind of hopeful. I still hadn't found a director. So I mean, I made a real generous offer to some people, and they turned me down. And I mean, it wasn't as generous as they wanted, basically. But you know, so the deal was not struck.
Right.
And so basically, I was saddled with it. And at this point, I'm still thinking, I will be successful if this place survives, and the business school takes it over. Right. So that's the road I'm going down. And I had, by that time, I had already notified, in April, I had notified students who were coming in that, look, this program, this is with the approval of the university committee, with the approval of the provost and the chancellor, this program is on shaky grounds here. So if you come, you know, it's at your own risk. I think I said, we're committed to meeting your program requirements, but still, it might close, and you know, it's something you might want to consider. But I think just about everybody came, you know, in beginning of fall 2002, and that class just finished up. Okay, that was the last class that was admitted. Anyway, I guess it was I learned as fall came around, and I think I learned, maybe it was in winter 2003, I learned that the business school wrote a proposal that it gave to the provost, proposing that the provost take whatever funds L&S saved by closing it and give those funds to the business school, and the business school would keep open industrial relations. Right. In fact, they asked, the business school asked for, the number I heard was about 20% more than you really needed to run the place. But that was their request to the provost. Now, this is a little bit of guesswork, but it's a figure I heard. Because it took about $300,000 to run the place.
Right.
And I think the request I heard was that they asked the provost for $360,000 to be injected into their budget, a new, you know, an addition to their budget. And I think Peter denied that request.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sorry to see that, because I was thinking, boy, if I could pull this off, it'd be great.
Yeah.
So that was that. I mean, you know, there was no more to me. It was over at that point. Except for the reaction of people. And I think there was a letter writing campaign organized, you know, what's his name? Miracle?
Ken.
Ken Miracle.
Ken.
Thinking of his son, David. Ken Miracle asked for the database, the alumni database.
Right.
I had it sent to him.
Sure.
Same day, practically.
Right.
And so I think they tried to organize a letter-writing campaign. What I saw were the letters that were written to the of that campaign were the letters written to the chancellor, and the chancellor had forwarded to me. And I don't believe there were more than 10 letters that the chancellor forwarded to me. And don't forget, I mean, at the same time, while all this is going on, L&S is cutting its budget by 6%.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
So, this became part of that cut. That's the history as I know it.
Yeah.
The degree remains on the books until the PhD students complete their studies, hopefully in a timely manner.
Right.
The master students, all of them are cleared out, but two who are part-time and have taken all the IR courses they need and can fulfill their requirements with other courses.
Yeah.
And as far as the employees there, there are no casualties yet. There's one possible casualty, and that's Charlotte.
Yeah.
One person just applied for another job at the university, took it. Someone else went back to teaching.
Yeah.
Sue.
Yeah, Sue.
Right, she went back to teaching. And so then there's Charlotte, and that's the situation.
Right.
And that's pretty much, I think, you know, for me, I became convinced that institutionally this was just not, especially what happened. I mean, economics no longer had an interest in it. They weren't going to hire folks for it. The folks they hired weren't going to participate because economics had gone off in a totally different direction.
Right.
You know, it was a very different discipline than it had been in the 70s and the early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And this department is totally different. And to my chagrin, you know, I keep encouraging them to do a little bit more of what they used to do. And they say no, they can't do that and be top 10.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the situation.
Yeah. Now, wasn't there some, didn't it come up at a Regents meeting?
Yeah, someone brought it up at a Regents meeting.
Solace?
One of the Regents brought it up.
Solace?
I just know what I read in the paper.
Okay.
I don't know anything more than that. I think either he or some relative of his had a degree from the institute.
Yeah, I think I'd heard that, I don't know, his son maybe, or somebody.
But I just read it in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you something. I mean, it's not a tenured department. It's not a tenure home, right?
That's right.
So, you know, it's easier to have this kind of conclusion.
Oh, yeah.
Or close a non-department.
Right.
And, but it, you know, it, it went, you know, as well as these kinds of things can go. It probably, I don't know if it could have been avoided. I don't even know if it could have been delayed, actually. Well, I think it was delayed, actually. I think it was delayed from 97 until this year, 7 years, because the writing was on the wall back then. The effort, we made an effort to hire, you know, we had three different recruitments to get new leadership into the place, and that was failing.
Yeah.
So it was kind of, it was a process that began before I came aboard.
Well, there had been an effort to get tenure granting authority back in 77, 78.
Probably, yeah.
And then that narrowly missed out in the Academic Planning Council. And I think Bob Lampman was skeptical about the whole thing.
Oh, really? Okay.
And then in 84, 85, there was an LNS review, and then they recommended strongly tenure. And then I was director. And
oh, okay.
But then Dave Cronin said, well, they had some trouble with IES that was giving tenure and didn't have tenure granting authority or something like that.
Right.
Brian Curl was trying to get that straightened out. Let's hold off a little bit.
Right.
Well, meanwhile, then we recruited Streck and Sam.
Cohen.
Oh, yeah. I was trying to think of his name recently.
Yeah, Sam.
And then we had this guy from history who did not get tenure eventually.
Yeah.
And then we had, Jonathan was recruited.
Right.
So it looked like we
had
some, you know, something
momentum
going again.
Yeah.
But then, you know, that string ran out as more and more people retired.
And Streck, you know, he had a piece of his appointment, and then he moved all of his appointment into sociology. And so, I mean, I think the commitment of the faculty that you had recruited, and some faculty since then, to the master's program was quite weak. The business school, I think, was committed.
Yeah,
to
they were.
Those people were committed to the master's program. And that's why, you know, I tried to convince them that they should take the Institute on its merits, because I thought it had, you know, it was definitely worth, you know, whatever it would. And as far as running it goes, you got to remember that if 80% of the budget, or at least 60% of the budget, is salaries of business school professors, those are salaries they're going to have to pay anyway if the Institute closes.
Exactly.
So the marginal costs would not be much. So but I think the business school had a different agenda, you know, a new guy, and I think Mike, I have a ton of respect for Mike, and I think, you know, he did what he could, but I think that was, the school was moving in a somewhat different direction. He made an effort, it failed, that's the way it goes.
And you always ask for more than you hope to get.
Probably. Yeah. He may have honestly figured out that that's what he needed. He he probably thought, well, this is going to be a bigger enterprise if it's going to be anything.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
And if it's going to be successful, it has to have this much, because we know that it wasn't successful with what it had.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that could have been the feeling. So now we're here.
We're here. The end. The end. Well, you've, I think, given a fairly quite complete rundown on the whole thing. Let's see. So Jonathan is now, is he?
He's in sociology.
He's in sociology. Wasn't he in history before?
Yes, he had a piece of his appointment in, well, his whole tenure home was in history.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Is he still there? Or
no, now his tenure home is divided between La Follette and sociology.
Oh, I see.
Jonathan, I think, liked the idea of moving the school to, moving the Institute to La Follette. Yeah, so he went once, I'm not, you know, he didn't have to move his tenure home to sociology. But he had, you know, he had, I think, a half his home was in.
It was half IR, I think.
I don't know.
Maybe
I,
not.
His half his budgeted appointment was
IR.
But his tenure home, no, couldn't be.
Yes.
So now he's, I think it's 50% sociology. He'd already had a quarter appointment in sociology for like 3 or 4 years. When I was chair, I approved that. So now he's 100%. I think it's partly coincidence that he made the move totally to sociology in La Follette, and he's not associated with history at all anymore.
Yeah.
So.
And Charlotte said that sociology is handling these students who are still around.
Yeah, well, there's 11 of them.
Yeah.
And about 7 of them are Jonathan students. Mm-hmm. Right. So that kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
So I asked sociology if it would treat the these students as if they were their own in terms mm-hmm. of the resources that they typically made available.
Mm-hmm.
Computing resources, printing, right. all this
yeah.
kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And sociology agreed. There was no quid pro mm-hmm. quo, nothing.
Good.
They just said, yeah, sure, mm-hmm. we'll do it. Makes sense.
Very nice.
So that's what's happening on that score.
Okay, let's stop.
So it looks like Irv Shane's going to live to probably see the release of these tapes, eh?
Well, I guess Ed Young, somebody was telling me that his are sealed until he dies.
Oh, really? Oh, no kidding.
But, you know, Bill Sewell did an oral history, and it's been available for years, and he made very sharp statements about
really?
People. It's down in the archives.
No kidding.
Yeah, get on the basement of the library.
Yeah. Oh, that's
and it's right out with about
right.
20 others.
Right.
You know, he's made comments about Porter Butts and at the Union and various other
no
people.
No kidding.
Yeah, very
interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Of course, he was here in this tumultuous time before you got here.
Yeah,
course,
yeah, know. No, I know.
He had a rocky
he did.
Year or
he
two.
He did.
Yeah.
But in any event,
yeah.
so.
Any
other questions?
Well, do you know anything about what's happening to other institutes? I see that I read somewhere that Berkeley and UCLA, their money's been cut. They didn't have, you know, those were non-teaching.
Right. Yeah, they didn't have MA and PhD programs.
No, they were research and
research
outreach.
Centers.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's different.
Yeah, very different.
Very different. The valuable component of IR was the teaching
mm-hmm.
component, especially the MA program.
Right.
The PhD program, I think, had fallen on hard times.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what the quality of the students were. I've heard various things, uneven at best.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But damn, there was an MA program there. Right.
No,
I mean, they brought people in. They trained them. They
good.
Got them jobs. There was, there was something there,
mm-hmm.
right? And I really thought that, I genuinely believe, but you know, I don't know what the business school finances are like, and I don't know what the agenda for the future
mm-hmm.
was. But I thought they could have made a go of it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, I thought they could have exploited it
right.
in terms of cementing connections with various corporations.
Exactly.
Because that's where these students go, many
right.
of them. Some to unions, but a
right.
lot go to corporations.
Right. Most of them do.
Right.
You know,
so I thought it was, and I really tried my damnedest to persuade them to, now I never talked to Kinetter except for this one meeting that
mm-hmm.
we had, but I figured Schwab was passing on my long emails describing the value that was here and worth saving.
Yeah.
But it didn't
but,
come
you know,
that.
Dealing with these people, I remember Cronin, we met with the Bach, the business school dean, we met with the law school dean, you know.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
you know, these meetings, it's like you're boxing with shadows.
Oh, I know.
Well,
it's
yeah,
true.
You know, we're...
Yeah,
saying,
yeah, yeah, I know what
mumble,
it's like.
Mumble, mumble, you
yeah.
go out in the meeting and say, well, now, what really happened? And
you
realize,
I know.
Nothing.
I know. Yeah, that's for sure.
Nothing happened.
They're
all very skillful at
yeah.
doing that sort of thing.
I think it is surprising that there wasn't more turmoil accompanying
mm-hmm.
this. I mean, I think it went amazingly smoothly. I don't take credit for that. I think the big explanation, well, maybe the Institute wasn't that meaningful to even its own graduates.
Well,
but I thought there was the cover. It had the fact, the undeniable fact of this huge state budget deficit.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And that was not a matter of opinion.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. Yeah.
That was a forceful, compelling argument.
Right.
On the other hand, you know, as far as I know, IR, in the college anyway, is the only program to close.
Yeah, yeah, right.
And in the university, I don't know, maybe there's one other that closed.
Yeah.
And that's about it.
Yeah. Well, and then with the decline of unions and fewer people going into work.
That's true.
And then losing people and, you know, Craig Olson got
big loss.
Huge.
Right. He was a big loss.
Yeah.
And he got that huge package from Illinois.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was, that was a big loss.
Yeah.
There just weren't enough people in LNS who were committed to it.
Exactly.
So you would have LNS people on the steering committee.
Yeah.
But when it came to teaching in the institute or doing anything real, no.
Yeah.
But you talk to them about, you know, well, maybe we're going to have to close it. Oh, no, 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 you can't do that. It's valuable is valuable. Oh, so you're willing to do something for it? No, I've got other stuff to do. So people weren't stepping up. And I don't know if there'd been somebody aside from, if we had found somebody after, oh, even after I took over as interim director, I left open the possibility that it would move to LaFalle.
Oh, yes.
Right. Nobody pursued it.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to pursue it because that wasn't my business.
Right.
I need, you know, you need people to prove with their time and energy that something's important to them.
Exactly.
Nobody did anything. Yeah. So that's basically what happened.
Neglect. In a sense, yeah.
In a sense, yeah. Right. I mean, who's to say? Maybe they just made a good calculation that it wouldn't work. I think a lot of the faculty and I don't know. I know there were certain members of La Follette that wanted to see this happen. Move IR. How broad that sentiment was. I don't think, if it were broad, it would have probably happened. I know it was brought up at executive committee meetings. So there was an opportunity, and I guess people decided it wasn't worthwhile.
Well, Chuck, I appreciate your taking
time
to do
this. So should I fill this out?
Oh, yes, if you would. That would be helpful. And then, and it doesn't seem to me that you've said anything that's...
No, I haven't said anything too
revealing.
Recorded on 7...
12. Okay, that's the end of this interview. It's now about 2:10. We've been going for about 35, 40 minutes.
Still, I'm going to...
And thank you very much.
I'm going to